Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 15th. City, population tops 150,000. Midland grew by more than 38% since the 2010 census. The story was read by Stuart Doreen. Midland's population has officially topped 150,000, according to the City of Midland. Citing 2020 census information, city officials said Wednesday that the population for 2020 was 153,768. City officials stated that population is an increase from the 2019 estimate of 146,000. The city also reported that at a current 2.58% growth rate, the estimated population at the end of 2021 would be 157,000, end quote. What is confirmed is that Midland grew by more than 38% since the 2010 census, when a population of 111,000 was reported. At least two growth periods helped Midland grow by more than 40,000, even when factoring in two industry downturns and the COVID-19 pandemic. City population statistics showed that the population didn't decrease year over year during the decade. City officials stated that Midland will be the 20th largest city in the state. In 2010, Midland's population was the 28th largest in the state, according to the Texas State Library and Archives Commission. The numbers were given to the Midland City Council during a budget workshop. During the meeting, city leaders also talked about housing built in the city. It was reported that the number of housing permits this year is on a pace to reach 600, which would be the lowest total since 2011. The number of homes completed is on a pace of 400, which would be just the lowest total since 2016. City leaders also talked about apartments, which were said to be in abundance. In fact, Councilwoman Lori Blong used the term overbuilt to describe the number of apartments in Midland and said that a potential builder has opted not to build after looking at current conditions in Midland. ApartmentList.com stated in its July report that the median apartment prices in Midland are $709 for a one-bedroom and $866 for a two-bedroom. The median price for a two-bedroom apartment is down 13% year over year and is among the bottom three cities in the state of Texas of those markets Apartment List includes in its report. It is a remarkable turnaround from June 2019, when Midland's rent was the highest in the state at more than $1,600 a month, according to RentCafe.com. Scott Dufford said during the meeting that apartments might be harder to fill than during previous years, as operators have made changes in the amount of rigs they are operating. Last week's rig count was 237 rigs in the Permian Basin, which is 112 more than a year earlier, but also down considerably to before the pandemic and most recent industry downturn. Quote, "We probably won't get back to 400 rigs again," Dufford said, saying that operators are returning more profits to investors and showing discipline and not flooding the market with too much supply. Green Acres seeks to bring family fun back to Midland. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Quote, "Green Acres is a family thing, not a come-out-and-party thing." That was Jeff Beard's comment to the Reporter Telegram in May 2019 when he broke the news that a project would take place to reopen a Midland landmark. 2 years and 2 months later, the new turf is on the ground, the playground equipment is up, and the arcade is ready to go at what developers expect to be Midland's new favorite family center. Beard and the Dunn family took on this ambitious project and didn't mince words about the importance of creating a wonderland for Midland's families. Even days before opening, it was hard to have a conversation with Beard and not talk about why Green Acres matters so much. Quote, I have a family. All the Dunn partners have families, Beard said. How can we make this the greatest family place in the Permian Basin? And so that's what we're striving for. Hopefully, we can get there. Hopefully, we can meet those expectations. End quote. The Dunn family includes 6 adult-age kids and teams of grandkids. Beard has 3 children, so the family concept is important. Family fun will be possible with oversized chessboards and Jenga, cornhole, food trucks, pinball, and a vintage arcade with games like Asteroids, Galaga, Miss Pac-Man, Donkey Kong Jr., and more. It's laid back and retro, a way to experience Midland's East Side and alcohol-free. Drinking alcohol does not align with their vision for Green Acres. They admit the decision not to serve alcohol might not be good for making profits, but they insist it is best for business. There are enough places in Midland for people to enjoy alcohol, they said, but Green Acres will be about the family atmosphere. Quote, this is a family place, Beard said. We will not have alcohol. We will not sell alcohol. It will not be provided. It is a big thing for us, conveying that it's a family center, Beard added. Quote, Midland has long been known as a family town, and I think the last several years, maybe we've lost that a little bit. This is still a great family town, but there's not as many family things. With the revitalization of downtown and Centennial Park, I think people are saying, oh my goodness, we can do nice things, and it's really fun. End quote. About Green Acres. Address 2905 Highway 80 East Midland. Prices, miniature golf, $12 for adults, $8 for kids under 10. Arcade, $15 flat fee. Hours, 11 a.m. to last tea time at 9 p.m. Reservations needed. Green Acres is opening by reservations only in the beginning. Go to greenacresmidland.com to book a time. The web, greenacresmidland.com. Facebook, facebook.com/greenacresmidlandtx. City, proposed budget to top $136 million. Tax increases are a possibility in fiscal year 22. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. City leaders heard details of a proposed $136.5 million budget for fiscal year 2022. It was part of a budget process that will include the establishment of a proposed tax rate on August 10th and public hearings on the budget and tax rate on August 24th. Wednesday, city leaders participated in a budget workshop where they heard details of what the budget and tax rate could look like. The workshop included information about economic indicators, budget priorities, other budget highlights, valuations across the community, and the city's savings account. It also mentioned the possibilities for tax rates to help collect the money needed to pay for the proposed budget. Here are the highlights of the budget workshop held Wednesday at City Hall. Tax rates. There appear to be 2 rates that the council will consider. The first is 37.1 cents per $100 valuation. It is called the No New Revenue Rate, or what was formerly referred to as the effective rate. The council also will look at the rate that is just below where they would have to acquire voter approval. The rate is the No New Revenue Rate times 3.5%. The voter approval rate is 37.8 cents per $100 valuation. This current year's tax rate is 35.8 cents per $100 valuation. Tax impact. According to the city, there would be a tax impact on the homeowner with the no new revenue rate. For 2020, the average home in Midland carries a valuation of $272,000. The city tax bill for that home is $977. The city also reports that the Midland Central Appraisal District is showing that the average home value in Midland increased by 6% from fiscal year 2021 to fiscal year 2022. That means the average home valued at $272,000 this year will carry a valuation of $288,000 next fiscal year. The tax bill of that home, not factoring in exemptions, is $1,071, or an increase of more than $93. Should city leaders decide on a tax rate of 37.8 cents, which would bring in $1.2 million in additional revenue, then the city's tax bill on the average home in 2020 would increase to $1,093, an increase of nearly $22 over the proposed no new revenue rate, and nearly $116 more than last year's rate. Property taxes, sales tax, and more. Property taxes would make up 39% of the general fund revenue. Sales taxes, projected at $51 million next year, would make up 37% of the budget. Other sources of revenue include franchise fees, 11%, court fines and fees, 1.5%, ambulance fees, 2.1%, and licenses, permits, and other, 3.6%. City officials noted that the $53 million in property taxes does not pay for police and fire department budgets, around $69.7 million combined. Expenditures. The $136.5 million general fund budget is an increase of about $1 million compared to last year, but still down from the budget from fiscal year 2020, $142 million. The city reported that the $136.5 million would be the third most going back to fiscal year 2017, $128 million in fiscal year 2019, $142 million in fiscal year 2018, and $106 million in fiscal year 2017. Should the council approve a larger tax rate, then the general fund budget would increase to close to $138 million. The increase would likely pay for personnel and new equipment for the new animal services facility, $277,000, a new fire ambulance, $300,000, engineering positions, vehicles, and equipment, $340,000, and a new municipal court tech manager, $81,000, and more. General fund breakdown. Police department and fire department budgets are ranked first and second in terms of impact on the budget, $35.2 million and $34.5 million respectively. Engineering is third at $21.4 million, or 16% of the budget. The only other department at or above 10% of general fund expenditures is community services at 10%, or $13.1 million. Fund balance. City leaders learned that their fund balance, or savings, could grow to $83 million at the end of fiscal year 2021. City leaders told staff they want that fund balance around 35% of the budget, or around $48 million. City staff said that there are $31 million to be allocated on capital projects, and there is another $4 million in available funds for city leaders to use on other items that come up, or discretionary funds. Budget highlights. The city reported that the fiscal year 2022 budget highlights include a 2% salary increase for sworn and non-sworn city employees, $100,000 allocated for downtown events, oil and gas revenue moved into a Parks Special Revenue Fund that could include up to a combined $5 million from fiscal year 2021 and fiscal year 2022. $1.1 million in facilities improvements at multiple locations. 9 new firefighter positions. Budget calendar. August 10th, council to establish proposed tax rate. August 24th, public hearing on budget. Public hearing on tax rate. Ordinance first readings. To adopt budget ordinance, adopt tax rate ordinance. September 14th, ordinance second readings, council to adopt budget ordinance, adopt tax rate ordinance. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, July 15th. Eddie Louise Huff, age 96, of Midland, passed away at home, surrounded by family, on Friday, July 9th. Eddie Lou was born in Midland to William Lucius and Bessie Ethel Locklar on January 25th, 1925. She went to school in Midland and graduated from Midland High in 1943. She met and later married the love of her life, Leonard J. Huff, on November 6, 1943, in Midland. She worked as a draftsman for Sunray Company and the multiple companies that would buy them out before retiring from Chevron Texaco. Lou was preceded in death by her parents and by her husband, Leonard J. Huff, son, Larry Dean Huff, brothers, Arthur Jesse Locklar, James William Locklar, and Ernest Eugene Locklar. She is survived by her daughters, Carolyn Ann Richard and husband Donald Richard, and Cindy Bradley and husband Larry Bradley, both of Midland, as well as many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, July 16th, at Fairview Cemetery, with Scott Shepherd officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or a charity of your choice. Ella Lucille Barker passed away on July 11th. She was born to Mart and Ethel Morgan on February 14, 1930, in Vernon, Texas. Lucille is the second child of eight children. At the age of 19, Lucille met and married the love of her life, John Barker of Seymour, Texas, finally settling in Midland, where they raised their family. Services will be held as follows. Visitation at Ellis Funeral Home on Thursday, July 15th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., funeral will be at Ellis Funeral Home Chapel on Friday the 16th at 1 p.m., followed immediately by a small graveside service at Resthaven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Hospice of Midland. She was preceded in death by her husband of 38 years, John Barker, daughter Connie D. Barker, her parents Mart and Ethel Morgan, sister Edna Mae Welch, four brothers, Bill Morgan, Lester Morgan, Richard Morgan, and Jerry Morgan. She is survived by her daughter, Sandra Gossett, and husband Steve of College Station, Texas, son Neil Barker and wife Liz of Midland, granddaughter Stephanie Gossett of Minnesota, sister Anita Morgan of Seymour, Texas, and brother Bud Morgan of Wichita Falls, Texas, and many nieces and nephews. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave condolences for the Barker family. Hazel Parks was born July 8, 1936, in Blossom, Texas, to Mac and Willie Bell Stafford. Hazel passed away peacefully Saturday, July 10th, with the spirit of her children by her side. She leaves to cherish her memory her sons, George D. Parks, Jr., of Odessa, Regional Parks and Gregory Parks of Midland, Eric Parks of Frisco, Texas. She leaves 17 grandchildren and 21 great-grandchildren and a host of nieces and nephews and friends. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, July 16th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Saturday, July 17th at 9 a.m. at Alexander Temple Kajik at 200 North Tyler in Midland. Burial will be in Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Randall Dale Blansett, age 66, of Midland, passed away on Monday, July 12th. The family will receive friends on Wednesday, July 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Celebration of Life will be on Thursday, July 15th at 4 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Chapel. The family requests casual golf attire to celebrate Randall. Randall was born on October 23, 1954, to Loy and Winnie Blansett of Midland. He is survived by his mother, Winnie Blansett, brothers Bob Blansett and Russell Blansett, niece Tanya Spain, son Randall Blansett II, stepdaughters Amber Quintero and husband Jesse Garcia, Kimberly Muniz and husband Zeke Muniz, along with four grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his father, Loy Blansett, and sister, Donna Blansett. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Brigido Innocencio, age 89, of Midland, passed away July 13th. Viewing will begin at 8 a.m. Sunday, July 18th, with a funeral service at 1 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolence may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dussie V. Poole Sr. was born on June 2, 1936. He died on July 10, 2021. Visitation will be held Friday, July 16th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Ellis Funeral Home, 801 Andrews Highway in Midland. Funeral service will be held Saturday, July 17th, at Northside Church of Christ at 1511 North Fort Worth Street, starting 11 a.m. Hazeline Merrill Luck, age 89, of San Antonio, passed away July 12th. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, July 15th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, July 16th, at Crestview Baptist Church, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Margarito Lito Zuniga, age 82, passed away Monday, July 12th. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. Friday at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, 1401 Garden Lane in Midland. Interment will be at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Visitation will be from 1 to 9 p.m. Wednesday and 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, 2508 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Rosary is scheduled for 7 p.m. Thursday, also at the funeral home. Survivors include his wife, Neva Zuniga, four sons, Juan de Dios Zuniga, Josito Zuniga, Aaron Zuniga, Hebert Zuniga, a brother, Hector Manuel Zuniga, a sister, Maria Celia Nieto, nine grandchildren, and seven great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, July 15th, 2021. Spreading the Word. Photo by Eli Hartman, Odessa, America. Principal of Ross Elementary, Susan Hendricks, poses for a photo Wednesday afternoon in the foyer of Ross Elementary School. Ross Principal, excited about success of Opportunity Culture. By Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. Based on her success with the Opportunity Culture program, Ross Principal Susan Hendricks was one of a pool of campus chiefs recently selected to be an Opportunity Fellow. Public Impact announced the cohort of eight in June. Fellows provide support to their cohort, take one another's ideas back to their schools, write columns or lead webinars about their experiences, and speak locally and nationally about their opportunity culture roles. Their feedback and leadership are invaluable in helping to improve the Opportunity Culture Initiative and all materials related to it. Last year, for example, fellows shared their expertise in these webinars and columns. This year, fellows come from Tennessee, Arkansas, Texas, Illinois, Maryland, and North Carolina, a news release said. Hendricks just finished her second year as principal at Ross. The fellowship program started in June and lasts for a year. We're going to be providing support to fellow teachers, principals, district leaders, policymakers, sharing what has worked for us to get the success that we've had. I'm going to help lead the National Opportunity Culture Movement. I will do lead online workshop and just share what we've learned with each other, those seven other fellow principals that are in the cohort. So it's very exciting. It's an honor, Hendricks said. We've already started gathering some information, she added. Hendricks noted that Ross has been using opportunity culture on campus. According to the Opportunity Culture website, the initiative restructures pre-kindergarten through 12th grade schools to extend the reach of excellent teachers, principals, and their teams to more students for more pay within recurring school budgets. Hendricks said it also increases the reach of effective teachers and provides time for planning, collaboration, and development of teachers, which ultimately leads to student growth. Year-long paid residencies make on-the-job learning possible before teaching and leading, the site said. Opportunity culture has five pillars, Hendricks said. Hendricks said opportunity culture changed the whole climate at Ross. Teachers apply to become part of the opportunity culture team, and they coach teachers to help them grow in their craft. The purpose is to provide excellent teaching to all students. This year we were second grade through fifth grade opportunity culture, and this year was our first year doing it. And on the MAP, Measure of Academic Progress Assessment, we achieved above the 89th percentile nationally in 2nd through 5th grade math and above the 85th percentile in 4th and 5th grade reading, Hendricks said. And while statewide STAR results recently released by TEA showed a decrease among all students meeting standard across all subjects, Ross was the exception to that trend, Hendricks said. We have increased in all subjects since 2019, even though we had a pandemic. So opportunity culture has truly transformed our campus, not just the culture, but the achievement that the gaps that we're filling quickly. So we're doing very well. I'm very pleased, very proud of our team, she added. Hendricks said this is a testament to opportunity culture at the campus, and the buy-in has been 100% with strong, consistent leadership and strong opportunity culture teachers. Next year, we are going to be kindergarten through fifth grade, so it'll be school-wide. I think the contributions to our success have been our commitment to the opportunity culture, work, the structure, a structured plan in place, and the love and passion for growing teachers and coaching. That has been a huge part of why we have been so successful. Ross has about 386 students, and they will have 16 teachers next year, and all 16 will be part of the coaching. She added that opportunity culture is a structure that builds in time in the school day to collaborate for the coaches to be able to leave their classroom and go into their teammates' classroom and coach and model for them and grow them. The beauty of opportunity culture is that the multi-classroom teacher who is the lead instructor has his or her own classroom, so they know what's going on in the classroom. They are able to say, this works, we're going to do this and we're going to try this. I want you to come and watch me with my class, and they model for the other teachers. we have a lot of new teachers that are able to learn from these master teachers. And so in turn, what that does is that master teaching resonates throughout all the classrooms so that they're able to get that excellent teaching all students, Hendricks said. Executive Director of Leadership Alicia Press came to Hendricks with the Opportunity Culture Fellow chance, and Hendricks jumped at it. It is such an honor to have Mrs. Hendricks named a 2021-22 Opportunity Culture Fellow. By participating in the program, Mrs. Hendricks will have a nationwide network of support from like-minded leaders who are also transforming their respective schools through the OC movement. In addition, Mrs. Hendricks will get a platform to tell the Ross story to a broad audience of stakeholders in hopes of strengthening the Opportunity Culture Initiative for all schools and districts that follow, Press said in a text message. Hendricks added that Opportunity Culture will benefit the whole district. I don't want to be a principal without Opportunity Culture again. I mean, it is that powerful, she added. Learning from the other principals, Hendricks said, will help empower the program at Ross Elementary. Hendricks has been with EACISD for 18 years. She earned a bachelor's degree in education from University of Texas Permian Basin and a master's of educational leadership from Walden University. Opportunity Culture, opportunityculture.org. EACISD website, HectorCountyISD.org/Ross. On the net, publicimpact.com. Mid-S Anime to take place this year. By Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. After last year's event was canceled, owner of Fandom Events and Odessa Anime, Josh Wilson, is excited to see Mid-S Anime take place in person this year. Mid-S Anime, which is an anime convention, will take place from July 30th through August 1st at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, located at 305 East 5th Street. This will be the inaugural year for the event. The inaugural Mid-S Anime was originally supposed to take place last summer, but due to COVID-19 restrictions, the in-person convention was canceled. We are absolutely thrilled to be putting on an in-person convention, Wilson said. Mid-S Anime is scheduled to be the largest anime convention ever held outside of a major metropolis area in Texas. We're honored to have that privilege of doing it in the Permian Basin. Last year, we had everything ready to go, but then had to postpone due to COVID, which was the right thing to do. But now that everything is opened and people are vaccinated, we feel confident that this would be fine for an in-person convention. The convention will have a number of celebrity guest actors from anime shows and films. Some of the announced guests will include Jesse Flower, who does the voice of Toph from Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Leah Clark, who does Toga from My Hero Academia, Adam MacArthur, who voices Itadori from Jujutsu Kaisen, and Matthew David Rudd, who is also from Jujutsu Kaisen. We have a number of guest actors that will be coming, Wilson said. They're in some of the top-rated shows in the country. We have three from the top anime show in the world right now, and that's Jujutsu Kaisen. We have Matthew David Rudd, who plays one of the main characters in the show, and the lead of the show is Adam MacArthur. He plays the protagonist. It won the Anime of the Year a couple of months ago. We also have another actor in that show. His name is Landon MacDonald. He's an actor that's well known. He's also the lead villain in The Demon Slayer. Mugen Train, which was the top anime movie in the country for a time. All of our actors that we have coming have resumes that are pretty impressive. There will also be some local talent that will be present, including voice actress Christina Kelly from Midland, who, among her many characters, does Mine from Akame ga Kill. Kelly also plays Alice from Food Wars, which is a popular anime series, Wilson said. And then we have Billy Kometz, who's in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. That fan base is wild. It's a very popular show. Wilson says they are fortunate to have Kelly there. There are other celebrities that are local, but once they make it big, they move to Houston or Dallas because that's where the big recording studios are, Wilson said. But once COVID hit, it showed that you can record from home if they have the right setup. They've made it work. They've had to. As far as the other actors and actresses, Wilson says it is exciting to bring the amount of talent to the Permian Basin. They're phenomenal and very excited to be traveling to Texas, Wilson said. For some of them, it'll be their first time out in West Texas. The convention will also include T-Team Cosplay, Take on E-Improve, and Nico Nico Made Cafe and Host Club. The convention will also include Q&A panels. Those are always fun because you can ask the celebrities about their favorite roles and stuff like that, Wilson said. The convention will provide programming from around 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. Wilson recommends people to stay at the hotel for the weekend. There's something to do all the time, Wilson said. That's why we recommend stay at the hotel, because this is not a Comic Con where people come and go. People hear the word Anime Con and they think it's the same, but it's more of a retreat. You get here and you don't see the sun for 3 days. There's something to do constantly. We're happy to work with the Odessa Marriott. Visit Odessa has also been great to work with, too. With this year's event taking place at long last, Wilson is eager to see it take place. I've been in the convention business for almost 10 years now, and one of the common questions we get from out-of-towners is that this is an insane guest list for any convention like Houston or Dallas, let alone Odessa, Wilson said. And they'll ask, why are they coming to Odessa? And the short answer is, we invited them. Typically, we get to meet this type of caliber of actors. You have to drive to Dallas or Houston to meet them. It's great to see a show in our part of Texas that's the same star power and the same type of programming as in other places, and to have it here. There are anime fans in West Texas. There's thousands of us out here. If there's one locally, they'll give it a shot. People will come out and check out an anime convention. Those people will come back. If you go, what? Mid-S Anime. When? July 30th through August 1st. Where? Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. On the net, tinyurl.com/35FH3MSN. 530 days. For 530 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,724 total cases, 379 deaths. Midland County, 17,903 total cases, 274 deaths. Texas, 3,025,435 total cases, 52,886 deaths. U.S. cases, 34,835,667 total confirmed, and 623,724 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick Hits Showcase, Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio Street, Marfa, has scheduled a public showcase through Sunday, spotlighting three editions: Leo Villarreal's animated light sculpture, Star Cloud, James Evans' large-scale photograph of Prada Marfa, permanent land art project by artists Elm Green and Dragset, commissioned by Art Production Fund and Ballroom Marfa, and a biomorphic print by Solange Pessoa. A special reception will take place from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. The proceeds from the sale of the works directly benefits Ballroom and their mission to support living artists, musicians, and visionary thinkers of all kinds. To RSVP for the reception, visit https://rsvp.theworldsbest.events/_xp34j. For more information, call 432-729-3600. Email info@ballroommarfa.org or visit ballroommarfa.org. Wang Dang Doodle Open House. Tall City Blues Fest has scheduled a free Wang Dang Doodle Open House from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Come and go today at The Destination, 1705 West Industrial, Midland. The event will also include open mic night. For more information, visit tallcitybluesfest.com. Pop-up Market. A summer pop-up market has been scheduled from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday at Party Palace, 2635 Vaudrey Road. There will be food trucks and many vendors. Visit tinyurl.com/46PWMZD2. Hot Summer Nights. Odessa Arts will present Hot Summer Nights events from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., socially distanced, inside the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Events are scheduled as follows. Friday, Treaty Oak Revival. July 23rd, Current 9. July 30th, Mariachi Armonia. Ticket required. Free tickets are available at HotSummerNightsOdessa.com. General admission seating will be available at the door. First come, first serve. For more information, call 432-337-1492 or visit odessaarts.org. Movie in the Park. The City of Odessa Parks Department has scheduled a free Movie in the Park featuring Sonic on Friday at Lawndale Park. The movie is scheduled to begin at dark. Other films are scheduled. July 30th, Tom and Jerry at McKinney Park. August 6th, Trolls World Tour at Sherwood Park. Participants are encouraged to bring lawn chairs and blankets. Visit tinyurl.com/3VM39V38. United Family to donate toilet paper to Food Bank. The United Family will donate 26,496 rolls of toilet paper to the West Texas Food Bank at 10 a.m. today, July 15th, at the Food Bank, 411 South Pagewood Avenue. This donation is part of a larger donation of more than 200,000 rolls of toilet paper to food banks across Texas and New Mexico. As communities saw toilet paper fly off the shelves last year due to COVID-19, they were reminded of how important this necessity is for everyone. The donation represents over a $90,000 value, a news release said. Governor's Volunteer Awards. The nomination deadline for the 38th Annual Governor's Volunteer Awards have been extended. Submissions will close July 23rd. The Governor's Volunteer Awards are administered by One Star Foundation and are an opportunity for the state of Texas to honor the exemplary service and volunteerism of individuals and organizations making a significant impact in communities across Texas. Nominations for the awards are open in 9 categories: Governor's Lifetime Volunteer Achievement Award, First Lady's Youth Volunteer Rising Star Award, Volunteer of the Year Award, Volunteer Family of the Year Award, Corporate Volunteering Champion Award, Service Learning Champion Award, Innovation in Volunteerism Award, Excellence in Disaster Volunteerism Award, National Service Make a Difference Award. This year, the Governor's Volunteer Awards is introducing 3 new award categories: Volunteer Family of the Year Award. Volunteering together as a family is a special experience that extends care from within the household out into the community. This new award category celebrates families that prioritize service as a core personal value. Excellence in Disaster Volunteerism Award. As the most disaster-prone state in the nation, Texas relies on volunteers in all phases of disaster response and are key to creating sustainable and meaningful impact. Disaster volunteers deserve recognition for providing hope and stability in the midst of stressful and vulnerable circumstances, and for ensuring our state is resilient to further disasters. Innovation in Volunteering Award. During the COVID-19 pandemic, nonprofits developed incredible innovations, including virtual service opportunities and heightened safety protocols, to ensure continued volunteer engagement and service delivery. Volunteerism is always evolving to the shifting needs of our communities, and this award category highlights organizations that excel in adapting to these demands. The general public is asked to submit nominations for individuals and organizations who exemplify service and volunteerism that makes a significant impact in their local community across Texas. For descriptions of the award categories, or to nominate an individual or organization, visit onestarfoundation.org/governors-volunteer-awards. Awardees will be honored in the fall at an evening reception at the Governor's Mansion, hosted by Honorary Chair of the Governor's Volunteer Awards, Texas First Lady Cecilia Abbott. For more information, visit onestarfoundation.org/governors-volunteer-awards. Quick Hits Showcase, Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio Street, Marfa, has scheduled a public showcase through Sunday, spotlighting 3 editions: Leo Villarreal's animated light sculpture, Star Cloud; James Evans' large-scale photograph of Prada Marfa; Permanent Land Art Project by artists Elm Green and Dragset, commissioned by Art Production Fund and Ballroom Marfa; and a biomorphic print by Solange Pessoa. A special reception will take place from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday. The proceeds from the sale of the works directly benefits Ballroom and their mission to support living artists, musicians, and visionary thinkers of all kinds. To RSVP for the reception, visit https://rsvp.theworldsbest.events/_xp34j. For more information, call 432-729-3600. Email info@ballroommarfa.org or visit ballroommarfa.org. Wayne Dane Doodle Open House. Tall City Blues Fest has scheduled a free Wayne Dane Doodle Open House from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Come and go today at The Destination, 1705 West Industrial, Midland. The event will also include open mic night. For more information, visit tallcitybluesfest.com. Pop-up market. A summer pop-up market has been scheduled from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday at Party Palace, 2635 Faudry Road. There will be food trucks and many vendors. Visit tinyur.com/46PWMZD2. Hot Summer Nights. Odessa Arts will present Hot Summer Nights events from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., socially distanced, inside the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. Events are scheduled as follows. Friday, Treaty Oak Revival. July 23rd, Current 9. July 30th, Mariachi Armonia. Ticket required. Free tickets are available at HotSummerNightsOdessa.com. General admission seating will be available at the door. First come, first serve. For more information, call 432-337-1492 or visit odessaarts.org. Movie in the Park. The City of Odessa Parks Department has scheduled a free Movie in the Park featuring Sonic on Friday at Lawndale Park. The movie is scheduled to begin at dark. Other films are scheduled. July 30th, Tom and Jerry at McKinney Park. August 6th, Trolls World Tour at Sherwood Park. Participants are encouraged to bring lawn chairs and blankets. Visit tinyur.com/3VM39V38. United Family to donate toilet paper to food bank. The United Family will donate 26,496 rolls of toilet paper to the West Texas Food Bank at 10 a.m. today, July 15th, at the Food Bank, 411 South Pagewood Avenue. This donation is part of a larger donation of more than 200,000 rolls of toilet paper to food banks across Texas and New Mexico. As communities saw toilet paper fly off the shelves last year due to COVID-19, they were reminded of how important this necessity is for everyone. The donation represents over a $90,000 value, a news release said. Governor's Volunteer Awards. The nomination deadline for the 38th Annual Governor's Volunteer Awards have been extended. Submissions will close July 23rd. The Governor's Volunteer Awards are administered by One Star Foundation and are an opportunity for the state of Texas to honor the exemplary service and volunteerism of individuals and organizations making a significant impact in communities across Texas. Nominations for the awards are open in 9 categories: Governor's Lifetime Volunteer Achievement Award, First Lady's Youth Volunteer Rising Star Award, Volunteer of the Year Award, Volunteer Family of the Year Award, Corporate Volunteering Champion Award, Service Learning Champion Award, Innovation in Volunteerism Award, Excellence in Disaster Volunteerism Award, National Service Make a Difference Award. This year, the Governor's Volunteer Awards is introducing three new award categories. Volunteer Family of the Year Award. Volunteering together as a family is a special experience that extends care from within the household out into the community. This new award category celebrates families that prioritize service as a core personal value. Excellence in Disaster Volunteerism Award. As the most disaster-prone state in the nation, Texas relies on volunteers in all phases of disaster response and are key to creating sustainable and meaningful impact. Disaster volunteers deserve recognition for providing hope and stability in the midst of stressful and vulnerable circumstances, and for ensuring our state is resilient to further disasters. Innovation in Volunteering Award. During the COVID-19 pandemic, nonprofits developed incredible innovations, including virtual service opportunities and heightened safety protocols, to ensure continued volunteer engagement and service delivery. Volunteerism is always evolving to the shifting needs of our communities, and this award category highlights organizations that excel in adapting to these demands. The general public is asked to submit nominations for individuals and organizations who exemplify service and volunteerism that makes a significant impact in their local community across Texas. For descriptions of the award categories, or to nominate an individual or organization, visit onestarfoundation.org/governors-volunteer-awards. Awardees will be honored in the fall at an evening reception at the Governor's Mansion, hosted by Honorary Chair of the Governor's Volunteer Awards, Texas First Lady Cecilia Abbott. For more information, visit onestarfoundation.org/governors-volunteer-awards.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.